It's time for What's Up with Steve Abel from the Green Party.
Yes, it's time for our monthly catch up with the Green Party, and we've got Steve Abel in the studio this morning.
It's a bit different.
Kia ora, how's it going?
Oh, really nice good. Thank you for braving the awful weather to come up and have a kōrero with us.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's actually really good to get out and, you know, see the city.
Yes.
Even when it's pouring with rain.
Yeah.
I thought that was a backing track. That was actual live TUI. That was impressive.
I know, yeah. It's good, eh? Rick, he live crosses from his backyard us because he's got to stand out in the weather to tell us what it's like, you know?
Yeah. Of course.
Yes. There's all sorts of wildlife, especially a cat.
Oh, yes, he's got a cat, so often we'll hear his cat Willa purring in the background as well. But anywho, in the world of politics, there's a lot happening at the moment. A lot happening for the Greens as well. I thought maybe we could start by talking about the draft candidate list that's been published. I know it's just a draft, so tell us about what the sort of next steps for that will be.
Yeah, so the Greens have a thoroughly democratic process, you might say. It starts with delegates and lived experience networks. So the Rainbow Network, the Women's Network, Te Rōpū Painama, which is our Māori network, making the initial draft list, basically coming up with this is basically what we think. That then goes out to the entire membership. So the ballots have gone out to the membership already. So the membership right now are voting, and they have the option of re-ranking the list as they see fit. It's kind of an invidious task. It's an awful job. It's the reality of our list political system. Every single party has to do that. Mm-hmm. We have to create a list that orders in linear order who's going to get first into parliament depending on the party votes.
Yep.
So, and this is the process the Greens take for doing it. Other parties have a more top-down version of it. The executive chooses the list, but we have this very the final say is really the membership. The membership get to vote and rank the list, so we're at that stage right now, and I think in about 2 weeks the voting closes, and so we'll get a result for the final list pretty soon.
Your position on the list, ranked 14th currently, and yeah, I'm interested as to how you're feeling about this current position, because I know that there's currently 15 sitting MPs for the Green Party, but if we look at recent polls and such, the RNZ Read Research poll had the Green Party on 9.6% or 12 seats in the House. Are you worried about where you're sitting at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is we are here at the pleasure of, first of all, the party membership. They put us where they think that we should be. It is a very challenging task to do the ranking, and it's their prerogative as to who they think should be in certain places to get the right balance. In a sense, it's kind of like having two job interviews in 3 years, one by your own party and then a second one by the public.
Yeah.
And the public will decide what percentage we have in parliament.
So yeah.
I feel somewhat philosophical about it. I would like to be back in parliament, and that's, you know, to be decided by the members and the public.
Mm-hmm. Do you have enough faith in the Green Party going forward that you're going to rally the support to, you know, improve the polling numbers and secure your spot?
Oh, yeah, we have to have that. And what I think is interesting about what's going on right now with the Iran war is the way that affects the public psyche as to whether we feel like we're in a crisis. People tend to keep an incumbent government in a crisis. And I do wonder whether the very obviously bad way this government's handled the economy and divisive approach to politics they've generally had, whether that will be overridden somewhat by the Iran crisis, and people might not want to change the incumbent because of that. That's certainly what we got with the COVID election in 2020. So that's a bit of a political commentary more than a green commentary. I think we desperately need transformational change. We need people willing to realize that this proves exactly why we need a clean energy transition. We need to be more self-reliant, able to look after ourselves, feed ourselves, not let our food factories close down, and provide our own fuel and energy needs without dependency on imported fossil fuels, and the vicissitudes of overseas conflicts, you know, which we have no power over.
Let's talk about the crisis, the fuel crisis.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's a lot of kōrero about it, and the Green Party released this package for immediate relief for the crisis. There's a lot in there, but first maybe a bit of a response to what the government has done in terms of the $50 a week for that sort of squeezed middle low income families.
Yeah, it's, well, the thing is it doesn't capture the lowest income families. That's what's so kind of gross about that. But this is a classic thing that sadly both National and Labor do, is they give a sop to the middle income and lower middle income, but they ignore those people most in need, i.e. people who are in the worst stakes of poverty, people on benefits, and people who are out of work, you know, which could be for quite common reasons, such as, you know, just had a child, you know. So these are people who are working hard, but they're not currently earning an income. So our package would explicitly make sure that those people who are most at risk of hardship are getting money as well, getting supported. We also would bring back instill free public transport for all. There's a lot of governments who are doing work in the public transport space. It's a very obvious, easy thing to do.
Is it though? Like, do we have a quantifiable figure of how much that would actually cost the government?
$300 million.
Whoa.
So it's
that's
not
a lot.
It's in the scheme of things, it's not. When you think about how much more money we're paying on fuel over the course of, you know, months of paying quite a lot, you know, nearly double. Diesel prices nearly doubled. So if you can, and what are we doing here? We're managing the risk of there being a lack of available fuel over coming months, because this government sort of doesn't want to suggest that we could be in quite a bit of trouble going forward. But other governments, including just across the Tasman, have been much more forthright with the extent of the potential risk and the extent of the fuel shock. So by managing our fuel use, i.e. getting people out of cars where we can practically do that, we actually enable ourselves to be better set up for dealing with what's to come. So like, it's kind of an insurance policy, and that amount of money in the scheme of things, when they're spending, you know, literally tens of billions of dollars on roads, this government, like unimaginable amounts of money, kind of doing free public transport is a really solid investment. That
it's kind of equitable to the current relief plan. That's $373 million.
I guess the argument of the current government, though, is that they're trying to offer really targeted support and be careful where the money is put. You know, there's a lot of reference to the spending during COVID. And so they're looking at really targeted support. And yeah, I guess perhaps there's an argument there that public transport would be too much of a blanket solution when there are a lot of families and people who don't have like really close access, you know, rural families, people that aren't going to be able to take public transport for their work hours or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. And so you need to make sure that we actually, we've just sent a letter to rural representatives to ask what sort of relief they would need. But one of the things we're planning on doing is bringing back, or we would do if we were in government, would bring back school buses. This government's got rid of a whole lot of school buses, which particularly impacts rural people. So now people in rural areas having to drive their kids to school when previously a bus was picking them up. So yeah, you're right, there's people who don't have ready access to high quality public transport. But the other thing is that it's about recognizing the greater good for our society of us having multiple mobility options for people. And right now, if we can ease the pressure on people by saying public transport's free, you will also disproportionately hit a whole lot of people who use public transport already. You give them kind of a bit more leeway. And the other thing is, to stop the big corporations gouging us at this time, gouging like the profits that you get at a moment like this of crisis, we're going to have an excess profits tax as well as another proposal. So we'd actually be recouping some money potentially down the track that would help pay for some of these things, this relief for public.
Yeah, because another thing is the question of whether our public transport networks actually are equipped to deal with the huge influx of more people.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah,
I mean, that's a legit question. Are we equipped to deal with it?
Yeah, so Auckland Transport the other day were on talking about this, that they do have capacity, quite a lot of capacity. So they were confident that we could deal with it. I mean, it'd be great to get the City Rail Link open soon.
Oh, but wouldn't it be good? We're all holding out for the City Rail Link.
And look, this is a testament to the fact we should have been investing in this stuff for a longer time, you know.
Oh yeah, but it's always easier to say that once we're actually in the crisis.
Well, I have to say, in the last government we were funding lower electric vehicles. We did have a much bigger expenditure on public transport, much less focus on roads. And so had that stuff been continued by this government, we'd be in a much better place.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have 50,000 more electric cars on the road if the clean car discount had continued on its current trajectory. But yeah. they killed that.
Yeah. I think it'll be really interesting to see how policies roll out leading up to the election in regards to the fuel crisis. I think it'll shape the election in lots of ways.
So,
good to see some policy from the Greens and interested to see what everyone else brings to the table.
And so far, nothing.
I do want to touch quickly before we let you go on the Fisheries Amendment Bill, because we've had a bit of a U-turn from Shane Jones on this with this particularly contentious clause about minimum sizes for certain fish. It feels as though, you know, up until really recently he was had his, you know, head in the sand a little bit about being really certain on you know, the criticism being ridiculous.
Yeah.
And now there's been a bit of a U-turn, and so I'm curious as to what you think's happened there.
Well, I think it's a great example of public pressure, like lots of really good organising and mobilising by Legacy and Greenpeace and the Rick Fishers, and the pressure just came on politically and they moved. It's kind of a really useful thing to remind that you can actually get governments to change their positions if you put enough pressure on them. But it's a backdown on one little bit of it. The sort of easy headline sounds bad, being able to land undersized snapper and make money from it definitely shouldn't happen. But there's also other bad things in there, like not having sufficient public transparency and access to camera footage on boats and exorbitant fines of $50,000 if you use the camera footage.
Under the Information Act, right?
Yeah, but then they're lowering the fines for breaking the rules. Like the fines for fishers breaking their catch limits as it have gone down, but the fines for the public of using camera footage, which should be stuff that we have access to, have gone up wildly.
Yeah.
Those are some of the things. The judicial review time period down to 20 days if the minister makes a decision that isn't liked, which is basically a denial of justice to people wanting to challenge a ministerial decision, amongst a bunch of other things. New Zealand's the last country in the world still bottom trawling in the South Pacific. That's what Jonna did, that incredible long ocean swim against bottom trawling.
Yeah, that was
this
awesome.
Government's not going to stop this. Bottom trawling is something that should absolutely not be allowed. This bill continues business as usual in that way, and it's Shane Jones sidling up to his mates in the fishing industry and continue to trash our oceans against the public will.
He's made it pretty clear that he doesn't want to get rid of bottom trawling at all while he's in politics.
Yeah.
And a lot of his arguments about, you know, reducing the size limits was about, you know, reducing wastage.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I guess when I listen to that argument, in theory, you sort of understand that, you know, fisheries have to throw back anything they catch, dead or alive, whatever, if it's undersized. So if they're reducing wastage by not throwing back dead fish back into the ocean, is that in theory a good idea, or is it just leading to, you know, a lot of different boundaries and rules being crossed?
Exactly. A lot of the devil is in the detail on that. Like, it's requiring them to land the fish but not be allowed to make money for it is kind of a penalty in itself, but the problem is that they would effectively be able to make money from undersized fish. And that's just a step in the wrong direction. It basically says, hey, no harm if you do catch these undersized fish. There's a fundamental problem about the way the fishing's done, because a lot of those fish get pulled up from such depths that they're dead by the time they get to the surface. So you can't catch and release them. It's not like if you catch an undersized snapper on a fishing line, you can unhook it and it will, 9 times out of 10, will be fine. These fish have been brought up in such a way as a lot of them are dead by the time they get to the surface, or so damaged by the process that they can't survive. So it's a problem of industrial fishing in general. We have to ask a lot of questions about where it's appropriate to do it and how sustainable it is. So it's, you know, and Jones is the wrong guy for the job, because he will, no matter what, continue to do the bidding of the fishing industry. And this is something with this large public desire for better protection of our oceans, you know.
Do you think this, you know, particular matter of the size limits is going to be left to lie after this, or is this something that we're going to see continue?
It's still in the bill, by the way. They've said they're going to get rid of it, but the bill that came before the House still has it in there. So it's coming to the Primary Production Select Committee, which I sit on, and so we'll be scrutinising really intensely that. But National know they're vulnerable on this. They found out that their own voters weren't happy that they allowed ring net fishing in the marine protected areas in the Hauraki Gulf and the Te Kapa Moana bill. They realised that their own voters didn't like that, and so they're National are really movable on this. I think, well, I should be careful of saying that, they're vulnerable on it because they know there's a constituency that they appeal to that doesn't want to see our oceans being trashed. So putting pressure on the National Party to throw this bill out is effort well spent, I would say. Yeah.
Very good. Well, we've covered a lot of ground. Thank you for coming up and braving the weather for a chat in studio. It's nice to have a face-to-face corridor. And, have a great rest of your week.
Thanks so much. Can I give one little plug to a guy called Hamish, who's sitting in a beech tree on the west coast in the Cypress coal mine. He's been there since Sunday. He's 10 metres up a tree with a rope attached to his platform across a road, so they can't use the road to access the mine, and he stands in a long, proud tradition of activists who've protected our magnificent natural places from destruction by the likes of the Australian miner Bathurst. So big ups to Hamish.
Big ups to Hamish. Thank you so much, Steve. Have a good one.
That was What's Up with Steve Abel from the Green Party.